Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, we had our big graduation weekend this last weekend, and we had family and parents in, and then we had our high school graduation this week, and I'll tell you what, I'm tired of talking, so I hope my voice makes it through today's program. But over this weekend, I was talking with one of our Imperial Academy instructors. In fact, it was just yesterday. And she related to me how much she has enjoyed the Tribute to Charles Krauthammer series and was so sorry to hear that it's coming to an end. I think there is an old adage that says all good things have to come to an end. But I'm going to change that around a little bit today and just say, well, however, the spice of podcasting is variety. And so I know people have been really enjoying the Krauthammer series, and certainly I am somewhat sad also to see it end. But what I want to do today is I want to challenge everyone out there to finish the book and then send me a comment on which essay impacted you the most. So your work is not done. Really, my work is not done either. And I have a few ideas about how we might be able to bring Charles Krauthammer back every now and then just to spice up the podcast a little bit. We'll see what we can come up with. I just want to say again, I do agree with our most recent commenters that it is just a little sad to end this series on Krauthammer's Pulitzer Prize winning book of essays, Things That Matter. It certainly has helped me to grow as a writer, and I'm really being honest about that when I say that. And it was my son-in-law who told me one time, he said, you know, you're a good writer, but you write too much sometimes. And he said, I think you need to start studying Krauthammer because he could get a lot into the smallest sentence ever. And I think that was really true. But it's also helped me to grow as a radio host and I think as a deeper thinker. Now, if you have not purchased the book, Things That Matter, I highly recommend you do so. Really, every home library should have a copy. For today's program, what I want to do is I want to give you some final thoughts on Charles Krauthammer, not only as an essayist, but as a concerned citizen of America and as an impressive dad. There's a lot that you may not know about Charles Krauthammer. Of course, I think everyone knows he died, but it wasn't really that long ago that he died. What I want to do to help me today is I don't have anyone in the studio with me today because everyone is kind of relaxing after the semesters are over. But what I wanted to do is I want to use quotes from his posthumous book titled The Point of It All. This book was completed by his son Daniel Krauthammer, and I think there's really a lot to this book that can really help us kind of summarize Charles Krauthammer's life as not only as an essayist, but he was a favorite friend of many people. And then he also was a dad and a husband. I really think the first thing I like to say, I could really honestly call him essayist extraordinaire. And that's the way I really feel about him. You know, he really did do an awful lot as an essayist, but he was more than that. I mean, he was also, you know, a doctor, a medical doctor. He was also a psychiatrist. You know, he really had really just a full life, even when we consider the fact that he was paralyzed from the neck down. And he never wanted to draw attention to that. But here is what Daniel writes in the introduction to The Point of It All. Now, Charles Krauthammer died before he could finish the book. He gave it to his son to edit it, to finish it. I think that's just a very noble thing for a son to do for a father. But he writes at the very beginning of his introduction, he says, for almost four decades, he's referring to his father, he wrote a weekly column syndicated in the Washington Post and hundreds of other newspapers around the world. I mean, that in itself is a feat and an accomplishment. He wrote essays for preeminent magazines like The New Republic, Time, and the Weekly Standard. And I think if you remember back to early programs, and of course those that read the Philadelphia Trumpet regularly and have read it regularly in the past, you know that we've quoted many times from Charles Krauthammer because he had such deep thinking. And he was so good at writing. And he made his points clear and easy to understand. But he also appeared on television. I think that's how I knew him best, was being on Fox News. And so he commented on the events of the day throughout his career, culminating with nearly nightly appearances on Fox News Special Report. And again, he did that for over a decade. Daniel goes on to say, policymakers and politicians in Washington read him, listened to him, and often took their lead from him. But my father did not write solely for the cognoscenti. I had to look that word up, and I'm sure all of you will have to do that too. But a cognoscenti is just a person who's very well informed on intellectual matters. And so he didn't write just for the smarty pants. Maybe I could just put it in the vernacular. But he also wrote for the power brokers. In other words, all those that were in government. He goes on to say, he always told me that he wanted to write and speak so that anyone with intelligence and interest could grapple with and benefit from his arguments. If you really think about that, that is the mark of a great writer. You know, there's so many people in scholarship today that they feel like they have to write, you know, a lot of big words, and they have to really kind of make it complex, and they have to make it, it almost makes it too hard to even understand. But Charles Krauthammer did not do it that way. And even, as I even talked about just at the beginning of this program, even my son-in-law just believed that he was able to capture thoughts in really short sentences. And so I've been really trying more to get into that. And of course, now that the semester, the second semester is over, I'll be doing a lot more writing this summer, but also preparing a new series, which I'll talk a little bit about at the end of this program. But here's what Daniel tells us that his father believed, and maybe his formula for writing. And again, this is something that I think I learned, you know, a long time ago, because I know Mr. Herbert Armstrong, when I first came into, well, the Church of God, and at that time it was the Worldwide Church of God, I was working as a writer for Westinghouse Electric Corporation. You know, Mr. Armstrong's style was so easy to read, and it was so simple to understand that I really worked hard to imitate his style. And actually, Westinghouse at that time, I was really working for the Westinghouse Hanford Company. That was the government's contract company. You know, some of the engineers were doing some phenomenal work, but they couldn't communicate it because, well, it was too highfalutin, as Charles Krauthammer would say. So I really tried to imitate Mr. Armstrong's style, and I was really actually received awards from the government from some of the things that I had written. I was surprised when I read this the last couple of days of, you know, what Krauthammer really thought. And here's what Daniel said. He said he believed in Einstein's apocryphal dictum that if you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough. And I know when the engineers at Westinghouse began to realize that I was going to do some writing for them, they even said to me, well, you don't understand what we're doing enough. How can you write about it? And then eventually they came back and said, you know, you actually do a pretty good job of that. So you don't always have to write it in every bit of scholarly term. Now, Daniel goes on to say that, I believe, is the root of his extraordinary popularity. He didn't talk down. He thought that unnecessary complexity and heavy-handed erudition got in the way of true insighted knowledge. You don't want to talk in highfalutin, ridiculous abstractions that nobody understands, he said. Now, that's Daniel quoting his dad. Here's another quote. Just try to make things plain and clear. And Daniel goes on to say, he wished to express the truths he saw in the most universal, accessible, concise, and convincing way that he could. I think that is what made him really a great writer. There's also some other things, I think, that we can look at. He really goes on to explain that about his own writing style. And it is really kind of interesting, you know, what he says in this in his book, The Point of All. Now, this is on page XXI, so I really stuck with basically just the introduction to the book. And by the way, The Point of It All is another compilation of his essays and writings, but also some of his speeches. And so, like I said, it really is a good book. How did he write? I mean, what emphasis did he put in his writing? And again, I think this is something that I've actually tried to follow. this is on page 21 of the introduction. It says, in his treatise on rhetoric, Aristotle divided the modes of persuasion into three categories: pathos, or the appeal to the audience emotions; ethos, persuasion by the force of the speaker's character, reputation, and credibility; and logos, or the use of reason, evidence, and logical argumentation to convince the other side. Now, what Daniel says about his father, and I think we've proven that to you over this series, that he did not like to write from pathos. You know, he didn't write in an emotional context to just, say, rile up people's emotions. And I really don't like to speak that way and, to work on people's emotions. I kind of resist a speaker that does that when they're just trying to pull your emotions out. He also, and I think it's very true of his character, he didn't work by ethos. In other words, you know, he didn't just say, well, I think this or I think that, or look at me, look what I've done, look how smart I am. You know, there was no focus on I in any of his writing. But he says, listen to this. This is a really great quote. He says, my father was a master of logos. He relied on it almost exclusively. He was methodical, exacting, and airtight in the step-by-step progression of his thinking through an argument. He particularly disdained appeals to pathos and pulling the heartstrings of an audience. Indeed, these type of appeals were often the target of his withering criticism. He was a doctor by training, and it trained him, as he often said, to look at the evidence and follow where it led. And, we even learned how to do that even in our court case. And there was a lot of evidence that we uncovered, and it just led us right to really, a winning conclusion. Yeah, that's the way he wrote. That's the way he wanted to do things. It's really a very laudable way to write, where you're not just out there, trying to pull on people's heartstrings, and there's evidence for what you're saying. Daniel goes on to say, he did not like to talk about himself, especially in public and in his writing. And this is a quote, I've never wanted to make myself the focus of my career, he said in a 2013 interview. One of the things I aspire to in all of my columns is I never try to use the word I. To me, every time you use it, it's a failure. I'd rather let the words speak for themselves. Again, that's something writers and speakers can really take to the bank. It really is, something I think is really important. Daniel goes on to say he had no patience for actions and policies motivated by guilt or compassion or self-righteousness if the practical end result was a bad one. He was a deeply good man, possessed of deeply good and noble intentions in his personal life, but he firmly believed that good intentions as a national policy was at best foolhardy and at worst dangerous. And I bet if he were still alive today, maybe I shouldn't say I bet because I'm not a betting man, but I would think that he would be pretty upset by what's going on with all the stimulus packages, being given to people. And now they want another one. And we're already trillions of dollars in debt. And it's just adding trillions of dollars. You know, it has good intentions, but people don't want to go back to work now. They're getting more money staying at home. And I even heard someone actually tell me that personally the other day. Hey, why should I go back to work? I'm getting more money at home. In fact, with everything going on, they're getting more money now than they were when they got paid. Personally, I can't stand not to work. I think that one thing that my dad really did teach me, and he taught me well, is that you're happier when you're working. All right, the next thing that I think Daniel brings out that Charles Krauthammer actually wrote because he was concerned about America and really concerned for American citizens. You know, he felt a certain responsibility. I mean, he was very well educated. Obviously, he had deep thinking. He had a logical mind, and also he had vision. He could see things. He could see where things were going. We need help with that today, because really, as Mr. Stephen Fleury has been saying so much on the Trumpet Daily recently, there is no truth in the land, and in fact, people are being blinded. It's really, quite sad that Charles Krauthammer is off the scene because he wasn't blind to things. And he would be writing, I think, some really heavy-duty essays if he were alive today. And so right now, everyone has to rely on the Trumpet. and thetrumpet.com, and also our radio programs to, you know, to get the real truth. Here's what he says about his father and why he became a writer. This is, again, this is on page 16 of the introduction. He says, talking about his father, he said, he felt a responsibility to his readers and viewers, and beyond that, to history itself. Now, that's a man with vision. You know, I think he is going to go down as one of the great essayists of our time. Here's Daniel goes on to quote. He says, as he put it, I left psychiatry to start writing because I felt history happened outside the examining room door. That history was being shaped by a war of ideas, and I wanted to be in the arena. And, I mean, that's a great way of talking. Here he's talking to his son, and he said, history was being shaped by a war of ideas. And Mr. Armstrong said years ago in his book, Mystery of the Ages, that, you know, the problems in this world are minds clashing with minds. And so here Krauthammer understood that in his own way. He says, I wanted to be in the arena, not for its own sake. I enjoy intellectual combat, but I don't live for it. I want to be in the arena because some things matter, some things need to be said, some things need to be defended. And so that's almost exactly what, you know, Mr. Stephen Fleury has said on his program. And what he was giving was a tape. Part of his program the last couple of days was a tape of his address that he gave to the graduating students at Ambassador College. That war is horrible. We should hate war. But that sometimes there is a necessity to fight. And there's a spiritual necessity to fight right now. And we have to fight with the idea of getting victory. And so that was also Krauthammer's feeling. Let me repeat that again. I wanted to be in the arena because some things matter. Some things need to be said. Some things need to be defended. And I'll tell you what, you know, if you really want to stand up for the truth, now is the time when we need that more than we need it have ever needed it. So the thing is, I think Charles Krauthammer had a deep love for the American people. But I think he also had deep love for citizens all over the world. And he saw some horrible things in government. And we'll talk about that as we go. But notice what he says here on the same page. He says, my father was not just going through the motions. He cared deeply about everything he said and everything he wrote. He knew it would play a part in the discourses that shaped real policies, affected real people, and determined the future of the country he loved. He did not take that responsibility lightly. In a 2013 interview, he described the sense of duty he felt to pursue his vocation with the highest order of integrity. Quote, you're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly. Now, I like that. The Irish in me likes that. Because sometimes I can be too blunt. Sometimes I can be too honest. But there is a time when both are necessary. And so it takes the real intelligence, I guess, of a Krauthammer to be able to figure out when to do that. But anyway, he did have a big concern for America. Now, I'm just going to continue this one quote. It says, he always said what he thought, and he championed the ideas he believed in. That is why he will be missed by everyone who appreciated his arguments and insights. And that is why it was so important to me to complete this book for him and to complete it well. His thoughts mattered. His arguments mattered. His presence in our national discourse mattered. And I hope through this book they will continue to matter for future generations of readers. And so the thing that's really nice about this book, the point of it all, is that, you know, you can still read new things by Charles Krauthammer. And you can still get his view of what's happening in this world. So the last thing I want to talk about, again, let's talk about Charles Krauthammer, the impressive dad. And he really was a high man of character. And I think this book is such a testament to Charles Krauthammer. And it really shows what a wonderful father he was. So not only was he a great essayist, not only was he a great friend, but he was a great father. I want to read to you, this is from the very beginning, chapter one. It's the first essay that Daniel put into the book. And I do think this says a lot about Krauthammer as a father. And he also was a man of high character. This is really kind of a sweet and emotional essay. He says, 3 weeks ago, Daniel Pierre Krauthammer, our first, entered the world. It was a noisy and boisterous entry, as befits a 10-pound Krauthammer. It has been just as noisy and boisterous since. I had been warned by a friend and foe that life would never be the same. They were right. Now, I'm going to skip down to some of these things. And he made me think of the day my first daughter was born. I was still completing my master's degree at the time. And I remember the day is like it's yesterday. But he goes on and talks about his wife, Robin. He says, Robin needed a cesarean, and hoping I could comfort her, I was with her in the operating room. I was not looking for a Maslowian peak experience. Now, that's a complicated thing, but if he's talking about the psychologist Maslow, and Maslow did have some understanding, but we're not going to get into that today. He said, the kind of epiphany that reputedly accompanies the moment of birth. I was doubtful, not just because of my usual skepticism, but because of my previous career. In medical school, I had assisted at several births, including a couple of cesareans, and always had trouble seeing the poetry for the blood. So that's really funny. But there is something very special. I was there at the birth of my first daughter, saw it all. That really is a moving experience. But he says, there was little poetry this time either. It was an agonizing hour for her and for me. Now, Daniel did very well. The poetry came afterward in the recovery room where I found Daniel asleep in Robin's arms. So there you can see he could be really touching. And notice this, he said, it has been poetry and reverie ever since. Having a child, I discovered, makes you dream again and at the same time makes the dreams utterly real. Lately, I have been dreaming of the future. And that is what a child does for you. It does make you think, what's that child going to be like in a few years? You know, of course, I'm really blessed to have 4 daughters. And now I have 11 grandchildren. I still want one more. I want 12. We'll see if that happens. You know, you can't force these things. You just have to wait to see. But he goes on. I'm not going to read all the essay for time. But he goes on to think about what this child would be going through. And, you know, he talked about the year 2050 is when his child would probably be getting his first Social Security check. And one of his close friends said to him, where's your imagination, man? They'll all be memories. Think big. 2050, that could be the year he takes a sabbatical on Saturn. So I think that was kind of funny. But there, I don't think there's anybody taking a sabbatical on Saturn in 2050. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, there's probably going to be a lot more going on in Saturn in 2050 than we have time to even talk about on the radio. But he ended his essay by saying, I'm thinking small. I gaze at his body so perfectly formed, so perfectly innocent. It is yet to be written on. I look at his knee and wonder where will be the little mark that records his first 2-hard slide into second base. If you know Krauthammer well, you know he was a baseball fanatic, and he really loved baseball. All right, so now I want to read you a quote from Daniel about his father. This is in the introduction again to the point of it all. And I think what's really touching here is Charles Krauthammer and his son were very close. They really did know how to support each other, and not everybody has that kind of experience. It says, Charles Krauthammer was my father. Writing that sentence in the past tense is still a shock to me, and it evokes a sadness far too deep to express in words. My father and I were very close. I feel the pain of his absence every day, as does every son who loved his father. There were 1,000 secret, private things between him and me that I alone had known and that I alone will miss about the man who was my dad. And so you can just see the love that they had for each other. He goes on to say, but my father belonged not only to me, but to so many more, his friends, his colleagues, his readers, his viewers, the country, and indeed the world. That's just not the expression of, well, let's say, an effusive son. That's a son that saw the reality of his father. I could say, and I do want to say before this, it's like he's an essayist father to me because I'm learning from him. You know, I'm analyzing how he writes and how he does things. So what better tribute could a father receive than that from a son? And that should really help us to see what kind of man Charles Krauthammer really was. And really is kind of impressive. He goes on to say, he played a large role in the political life of this nation, and though he was far too self-effacing to say so himself, his thinking, his ideas, and his convictions shaped generations of political thinkers. And I think that's true, and I've mentioned more than once on the program that I hated politics, and it's, there's some personal things because of some family situations. But I've learned now that I've been wrong about that, that I should have been more aware of politics. And I think what Krauthammer was really very, very much aware of, it wasn't so much politics as it was good government or bad government. And I think that's really what he was addressing. You know, so I've learned that I really need to study more of things like Krauthammer wrote. He goes on to talk about the meaning of the book, why he put it in there. And I just want to read you some of this. And again, this is on this whole fact that he just really loves his dad and what his dad did. He says, when the time came to choose a title, I began the process by asking myself, what is this book about? I remembered the importance of that question to my father when he published Things That Matter. When it was released, I read it cover to cover in just a few sittings. I wrote my father a long letter telling him how incredible and magisterial a work I thought it was, and detailing exactly why I thought so. He wrote back to me the following. I couldn't wait to tell you how extraordinarily powerful and moving your letter was. The thing is basically what Charles Krauthammer says, that he's been kicking himself because he didn't see what his son saw in the book. And yet his son was able to give him the title, Things That Matter. So I think that was, a really, really good point. All right, one final quote, and I just wanted to leave you with this. It says, in Things That Matter, my father's focus fell largely on the threat of politics gone wrong. The entire 20th century, wrote, with its mass political enthusiasms, is a lesson in the supreme power of politics to produce ever-expanding circles of ruin. The ever-present backdrop of all things elegant and beautiful, he explores in that book, is the specter of totalitarian desolation. The book highlights a century of struggle between liberal democracies against three great ideologies of totalitarian nihilism. Now, nihilism is just the rejection of all religious and moral principles, if you didn't know what that word meant. He goes on to say, the book highlights a century of struggle between Nazism, communism, and radical Islamism. Politics is the moat, he wrote, the walls beyond which lie the barbarians. Fail to keep them at bay and everything burns. Daniel goes on to say he didn't think it was a mistake that he chose to celebrate the life of Winston Churchill in that book. And of course, I think everybody pretty much knows how we feel about Winston Churchill. So I really look at, when I think about Charles Krauthammer, I really think of him as a father to all essayists of character. I certainly am learning a lot from him. Well, be sure to add The Point of It All to your reading list. And that's all the time we have for today's program. Now, next time, we will begin our summer early fall series, and it's titled A Blast from the Past. Now, the first book of this series is the famous prophetic classic 1984 by George Orwell. This first selection has some eye-opening instruction that is happening right now in government and on your nightly news. And Krauthammer would know that it's dealing with totalitarianism. That's something we have to really face is happening in our world. You can buy 1984 at Amazon.com. You can find a used copy of the book at abebooks.com. And, of course, you can also check your local library. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. Don't forget, I've challenged you all. You need to finish Things That Matter and then tell me what is your best essay or the essay you love the most. You can follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So, until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.